Hi there, club members, and welcome to this week's Lunch and Learn. As you know, this month of April is all about teams. Last week, we spoke about how to hire the ideal candidate for the job. Today, we're talking about onboarding this new employee to give them every chance to succeed. Let's go straight to my PowerPoint presentation. Now, throughout this presentation, I'm going to be referring to a document that you can find in the free download section of the website. It's also attached to this Lunch and Learn as well, and it's the new employee onboarding process. And I'll be referring to it throughout. So I suggest if you are going to be tackling this onboarding process for a new employee, go straight to this download, print it out, and use it as a guide over the coming days and weeks while you're onboarding your new staff member. Now let's have a look at the goals of the onboarding process and why it is a well worthwhile effort to finesse this system within your practice, because it's just so crucial. Once you've found that ideal candidate and we went through a six-step process to find them, we don't want to now blow our chances because we're onboarding them in a way that could be improved. So this process is really going to help make sure that you're creating the ideal environment for this new employee, giving them everything they need so they can shine and bring their best performance to the fore. So the goals of the onboarding process is to, number one, the new employee gains a deep understanding of the vision and goals of the practice. Number two, the new employee settles easily and happily into their routine and team. Number three, it minimizes anxiety on both sides, mainly for the new employee coming into a brand new environment with brand new people trying to fit in. It also swiftly creates a relationship of safety and trust between the two parties and provides clarity of responsibilities and expectations, not just for you, but for the new employee as well. And it reduces errors and confusion in terms of their performance. It also creates an environment that really does encourage the best performance from this new employee. It reduces stress, avoids new employee overwhelm, which can certainly happen in some instances. It develops a positive attitude, creates a happy work environment, delivers a better chance for high job satisfaction, saves time for the supervisor, and it reduces staff turnover, because if we disappoint this new employee in this particular part of their journey with your practice, or they're not delivering a top performance because you haven't created an ideal enough environment for them, then you're going to have to change this employee over with a new one again. And that is certainly something we're going to try to avoid. And so these are the goals of the onboarding process. And I want to highlight, just put yourself in the mindset of a new employee coming into a new environment. They don't know anybody. They have no idea what's expected of them. They've got a feeling of what's expected of them because of previous workplaces and those expectations on them, because of what was discussed in the six-step process of this is what it's going to be like working at this particular practice. But you could be talking about a whole bunch of stuff. This is our mission statement. This is our team culture. These are the kind of patients we like to see. And you could learn that till the cows come home. But if that new employee comes on site and in reality it's a little bit different, that's what they're going to conform to. They're not going to conform to the ideal that was presented to them throughout the recruitment process. They're going to come in and assimilate to what is actual reality around them. So we have to be very careful with this process. We've got one tremendous shot at making sure this employee is happy, stays happy, wants to deliver a great performance and knows how to. And likewise, we can then perform well in their eyes as well. We want very much this situation to be a win-win arrangement. So where we left off from last week We hired the ideal candidate for this particular role in our practice. They've just left that final interview where we've delivered to them the contract that they can go home and read carefully and show their partner or their lawyer or whoever, and they're about to sign on the dotted line. And now we need to welcome them in with open arms and really set the tone for the journey moving forward. So what we're looking at first of all is their pre-arrival, and you can see up the top on the right hand side here, we're going to be going through pre-arrival, first day, first week, first month, first 3 months, and then first year. So it's quite a process. It sounds like it's going to be very long-winded and laborious. Believe me, it's not. It's all going to be very straightforward. So pre-arrival, before they even come in for the first time to work, this is what I suggest you do. First of all, send a welcome letter to this person. And we're going to revert back to the new employee onboarding process. I want to go down to the welcome letter and give you what I have delivered to you as an example. First impressions are crucial, so get off on the right foot and welcome your new employee with optimism and confidence. You want to convey that you are grateful for the chance to incorporate their character and skill into your practice and assure them that they will likewise be thankful for this opportunity. Now, this is the letter that I suggest that you use as a bit of a framework. Dear new employee, this is a quick note to tell you that our whole practice is excited about your decision to accept our offer of employment. We could not be happier to welcome you to the team. As we agreed, your first day on the job is, and make sure that that's listed there, their first date, and we will expect you at what time. Now, don't be caught out here. Don't put down the time of the first patient being 9 o'clock, for example. If you expect them there half an hour prior to the first patient at 8:30, then say 8:30 here. If you want to have a chance to have the whole team meet and greet and teach the opening routine of the practice, and you want them a little bit earlier than that, then put 8 o'clock there instead. But we will expect you at this specific time. I want you to imagine receiving this letter after you've just committed to starting a new position. Much of your first day will be orientation. We will ensure payroll have all the necessary information, such as banking details, tax file number declaration, and superannuation fund. Go through your employee handbook together to make sure any questions you may have are answered. Introduce you to the team and workplace. Familiarize and train, if needed, you in our practice software. And then you could name the software here so they're aware of what you use. And train you in your basic responsibilities. So we've set out exactly what they are to expect on that first day. And just like we've learned that delivering patients a clear expectation of what they should be experiencing when they come and visit us, we also want to make sure that we're supplying those same expectations to our new employee, because we can only meet or hopefully surpass expectations when we know what they are. And we know what those expectations are if we tell them what to expect. Let's go on. Included with this letter is your employee handbook. This provides you with all the information you need to confidently commence your employment with us. Our goal is to orient you to both your new job and the practice. With this in mind, we have allocated Sally to work closely with you and provide on-the-job training. She is experienced in all aspects of the job you need to learn. Now, giving somebody a bit of a mentor, a buddy, if you like, to work with from day one is a tremendous way of welcoming somebody in. Otherwise, if they have a question about a particular thing, who do I speak to? Do I speak to the bookkeeper about that? Do I speak to the boss? Do I go to the receptionist? Who do I speak to about these things? And giving them a buddy means that all of their little questions that may seem insignificant, but to the person they're enormous, because it's an indication of how they need to be behaving, they've got someone right there whose whole purpose is to make sure those questions can be asked and answered. And that buddy also is like a bit of an ally and a cheerleader for that person. So do allocate the appropriate person on your team as a buddy for a new employee. You want somebody who is patient and kind and generous-hearted, and somebody who is going to be a bit of a cheerleader and help motivate that person and encourage them to feel happy and confident in their first days working at your practice. The person you are directly responsible to is Dr. Smith. Please feel welcome to discuss your incorporation into the practice with them freely. We have set up a series of feedback meetings to provide the opportunity to check in as to how you are doing in your new role. It is important we identify any barriers to your success and happiness. These meetings are also a good time to discuss how well your expectations of us and ours of you are being met. If you have any questions, please feel free to call me. My details are blah, blah. We really look forward to working with you. Now, if you received that letter, before you'd even started on your first day, you would feel so much more calm, confident, and familiar when you walk in on that first time that you're turning up to work. So it is a lovely step in the welcome process, and I encourage you to do it. The next step of the pre-arrival, so before they even start, is the send them the new employee handbook. And this was mentioned in the welcome letter. So let's have a look at the kind of details I'm talking about that should be included in this new employee handbook. Now, I often say to practices when they have a new employee joining their group to be aware of just how foreign everything is for that new employee, just how many questions they're going to have and how much they want to be accepted and become part of the team really quickly. And the example I use is, think of a new employee like a foster child coming into your home to live, you know, a young teenager. Consider all the things they would need to know to feel secure, familiar, and welcome. So you put yourself in that headspace of a young teenager, you're going into a brand new home straight away, you don't know how they behave, you don't know how they act, you don't know what the rules are, you don't know what you can get away with. So let's go through a few of those questions that first come to mind, and it can help you understand the headspace that this new employee is in, and therefore what you can do to help them feel more welcome from the very start. So first of all, if you're a foster child in a brand new home, you might think to yourself, do I get a house key? Am I allowed to come and go as I please? When is dinner time? Do we eat dinner at the table or in front of the television? What activities do you guys do on the weekends? What do I do with my dirty laundry? Like, you just think about these little things. They've gone off for a shower. They've taken off their dirty clothes. What do I do? Do I wash them myself? Do I take them somewhere? Do I give them to one of the parents? Is swearing acceptable? What do I do when I feel unhappy? Should I just kind of hide away by myself, or can I actually approach any of these members of my foster family to help me out? Can I have friends over? Is there a curfew? These are the sort of things that someone needs to know, a foster child would need to know straight away. So let's start addressing all of those key areas for the new employee. What do they need to know straight away so they know how to act and behave? So the lack of understanding of the family dynamic, how do they behave and what their routine is, contributes to alienate the child. The same is true for a new employee. The new employee handbook, therefore, I suggest includes, first of all, a basic information sheet. It details things such as car parking, where are you allowed to park? Imagine if she turned up and parked in the owner's spot where only the owner ever parked there and she got in trouble for that. Entry keys, alarm code information, where to store personal items such as a handbag, what to do with a uniform, where to put the uniform, do I take the uniform home? Lunch routine, like, does everyone go to lunch at the same time? Is there a fridge I can put my lunch into? Do people go outside for lunch? Do we need to answer the phone during our lunch break? Holidays and process for requesting leave. Sick days and process for notifying people when we're ill. So if she, 2 weeks down the track, if she woke up with a migraine, do I ring the owner? Do I ring the receptionist? Do I text? Do I call? What do I do? Process of who to contact should they be running late for work. Personal calls and mobile phone policy. and process for registering concerns and or complaints. And that's an important one. We always want to know if someone's got a real key concern. We want to be able to jump on top of those things straight away. So a basic information sheet detailing this and anything else that is relevant to your particular practice, print that out and have that as page number one in your employee handbook. The next thing that the employee handbook should include are your personal practice policies. So behavior policy, culture policy, appearance policy, customer service and privacy policy, any of the policies that you've got established in your practice that you want your employees to live and breathe, then make sure that you include that in written form in their employee handbook. It's not enough just to read these things once. They might need to go back and read them again and again. And it's crucial, as you can imagine, if you expect that new employee to come on board and start behaving with patients and team members the way you've stated in your policy, let's make sure that the whole team are doing the same thing. Because remember, if you write it down as a policy, it'll be read, but what you'll actually do is assimilate to what culture is in reality being displayed. The job description. So always have that list of responsibilities that employee can look back on at any time. So we all know that it's everyone's responsibility to take the bins out, the sign out, to sweep the floors if they're needed, and all the rest of their normal responsibilities as part of their role. Also, we want a separate loose sheet of paper for the new employee to complete and hand into payroll, which has personal contact details, bank account details, their old superannuation funds and account numbers, all those sort of things that payroll would need to do to establish this as a new employee of your practice. And if you don't know what to list on that, just ask your bookkeeper. Also, the employment agreement for them to assess and sign. So you may have already given them the contract or the employment agreement at that final interview where you actually hired them. Or you might have the final interview and then send them away, have a final chit chat with the rest of the team who are involved in the hiring process. And then once you've determined, yep, we're going to go right ahead, then you could possibly even send them a formal letter of offer for the position that includes the contract. Encourage them to read through the contract carefully. You highlight anything that you feel is particularly relevant that could be outside the norm of a normal contract. And then they are to have that's signed, scanned, they get a copy, you guys keep a copy, always have a digital copy on board. So that's the pre-arrival. That's all the stuff that's in the handbook. So the third element was send the employment agreement. Make sure that all these things are done in a very timely way. We don't want that employment agreement to go unsigned for a week or two or even longer. We want that to be lickety-split done real swift. So that's pre-arrival. Send the welcome letter with the employee handbook and their employment agreement or contract. That'll get sent out to them directly so they've got time to process all the information and get super excited about their first day. What's going to happen on their first day? We've got four elements involved in the first day. The first one is assist the employee with all their payroll documents. And so, you know, they've come in to start working for the day. We do need to make sure that certain paperwork's done so they can actually be paid effectively. And so make sure that all of those payroll documents, whatever they need to sign, hand over, duplicate, copy, all the rest of it, that is all done on their first day. Then we can just get down to business. The next step is to introduce the employee to the whole team and the workspace. They may have already had a bit of a tour, a small meet and greet in the past, but certainly take them around again. They would certainly have forgotten other team members' names by now if they only met them once or twice at previous interviews. And just now that they can actually put themselves in the position of working in your practice, it'll make that tour around the practice will be more relevant for them. So this is your sterilization room. This is your surgery you'll be working at. Here are all your team members, and you know, we want the whole team to be as encouraging and positive and happy as possible. Really try to get everything started off on the right foot. The next step on that first day is to train the employee on the practice software. Now, any kind of responsibilities they hold for the day for the first few days and any kind of training. We're talking basics only, just enough to get by. I'll be speaking a little bit later about how easy it is to overwhelm a person with too much information, and we don't want to do that. So we want to make sure that they're trained in the practice software. They may already know it, but if they don't, if they're going to be a dental assistant, train them in basic charting. If they're a receptionist, train them in basic appointment making and account and receipt generation. As I say, just the basics, don't go on too much. And the fourth step is to train them in basic responsibilities. And they're the kind of responsibilities that you would want a temp nurse to be able to do as they're filling in for the day. So you may not be training them in maintenance of the autoclave, but you're training them in how to activate the autoclave, how to activate Bowie, Dick and back test, how to strip their surgery down, how to set up for the next patient, just the basic responsibilities. And that is all day number one. We don't want to overwhelm people. We don't want them going home and going, crikey, I'm never going to learn all this stuff. It's just too much. I feel totally incompetent there. That's what we don't want. So if day one, make it a nice, gentle day. Overstaff yourself a little bit so you can have a nice, gentle day. Because remember, for you guys, it's a gentle day. For them, it's still going to be a lot of information. Now we move into the first week. What's happening within the first Monday to Friday or Monday to Saturday? And what we want to do is familiarize the employee with the practice daily routine. So if you are the one that's arriving first to the practice, this is what you do. I'm going to take you through, get them to unlock the door and put in the alarm code. If they do it themselves, they're more likely to remember. It leaves a stronger impression on our brain by far in doing than just by listening to somebody give you an instruction. This is how all the light switches are on. Here's the heating. Here's the cooling. Here's the oil burner. Here's the music. And then what we normally do is whoever turns up first turns on all the lights through the surgeries as well, make sure all the computers are on. So take them through the opening of the practice and any other daily routines. Okay, so if the bin in the staff room is getting kind of full after lunchtime, we're going to take that out to the bins right now. Let me show you where they're kept. So take them through just those practice daily routines. What you want is that by the end of that week, that team member is quite confident opening up by themselves and closing down by themselves and knowing what the daily routine is. The second thing is to assign small achievable tasks. If they're a trained dental assistant, then they're doing the dental assisting. That's their normal achievable task that they'll be able to get through that whole week. If it's a receptionist, then you can make sure that they're the ones that by the end of the week, they're doing all the payments, all the appointment scheduling, all the telephone answering. So just keep the tasks that you deliver upon to them small and achievable, normal everyday tasks, nothing over the top. For example, with the receptionist in the first week, you wouldn't be telling them how to go through the whole recall strategy or tracking key performance indicators. The third thing that you want to get done in that first week, towards the end of the week, is take that employee out to lunch and check in with them how their introduction and progress is going. Do you have any questions or queries? Are you feeling like everyone is helping to encourage you on your journey? Do you have any problems that you'd like to raise? So take them out to lunch and just have a nice social chat about how they're going. So their first week has been a pretty good week. They've been well supported. There's been a lot of this is how you do things. And so from the second week and on, they're really turning up to work, fulfilling their roles as a team member. But we're not done yet. We want to make sure that both expectations on the employee side as the kind of employer we are, and our expectations of the kind of employee and the kind of performance that we need from them, we need to make sure that our expectations are being met. We don't want any guesswork. We want to be really clear and upfront about these things. And so within the first month, schedule weekly feedback meetings to make sure both sides' expectations are being met and any barriers to performance and happiness are being identified and managed. So this is a really lovely time, and remember that lovely question that I love everyone asking, what can I do for you? This is a wonderful frame to enter into this meeting. You want to go into this meeting saying, what can I do for you now? You've been here for a few weeks now. What can I do for you to help you reach the expectations that we have in terms of performance? And they might say, I need a little bit more training in communications, or can people go through the software charting with me again? So find out if there are any barriers to them performing really well and provide solutions around that. And also, this is the time now as well, other people want to know if they're on track to meeting your expectations, whether they're making you happy or not, whether they are actually indeed being successful and fitting in and becoming an active member of the team. So this is where you can say, I've noticed that your communication skills with patients is really lovely. You're a great rapport builder, very friendly. You're the personal presentation that you turn up with every day, spot on. It's exactly what we want to see moving forward. That's fantastic. You're being very helpful with the other team members. You're becoming part of the team. It's great to see that as well. And if there's any concerns, such as what I would like to see, if it's possible, is that when the phone's ringing, if you could answer it a little bit more swiftly. It tends to ring a few times, but what we want to do is have that phone answered within the first couple of rings. So when, where possible, if you can do that, that'd be super. And so you are providing feedback of what they're doing great and what areas they could improve in. And you want that to be a two-way conversation. So ask them the question if they don't offer the information itself to you. Ask them the question, what can I do for you to help you on your journey? And so that's happening in the first month. So at the end of the first week, you've got the going out to lunch and just checking in. End of the second week, you've got a feedback meeting. End of the third week, a feedback meeting. And end of the fourth week, a feedback meeting. And then that's the first month done. And as you can see, the intense stuff really happens in the first week, especially their first day. The rest of it's just checking in. So it's not terribly time intensive, but all of these actions are very intentional. And the intention is to make sure that this working relationship, as I said before, is going to be a win-win. So then we move into the first 3 months. We want to continue checking in with people, making sure that the expectations are clear on both sides and that we're meeting those expectations on both sides. And if we're not, how to overcome whatever barriers there are to get there. So then drop off the weekly feedback meetings to be monthly instead. And so schedule the next monthly meeting. So that'll be at the end of the second month and at the end of the third month, and check in with how they're going. Same sort of discussion as in those weekly feedback meetings. And then the first year. So a year's up, you've been working here for 12 months. Congratulations, it's all worked out so beautifully. So now you can start scheduling ongoing performance assessments if that's what you do. Some practices choose not to do performance assessments and some practices choose to do them. I support either way. The performance assessment itself can be done in a helpful way or an unhelpful way. And that's one of the topics that we're going to be talking about within this month of April, being Teams Month. So next week, we're talking about team culture. And the week after that, we're going through performance assessment. So I can let you know a great way of getting them done so everyone walks out motivated and enthusiastic. So schedule those performance assessments yearly to provide the opportunity for mutual feedback and improvement. Of course, that doesn't mean that you cease communication in between times. We want to always be providing feedback, receiving feedback, positive and stuff that needs to be improved as well. So the whole team and the individuals themselves, everyone's improving together. Now, I just wanted to bring your mind to what happens to our brains and ourselves when we have to start learning a whole bunch of new skills, habits, behaviors, and systems. First of all, let's have a look at the learning zone. And I was mentioning before, we don't want to overwhelm somebody. So if you can see in this area here, we've got the panic zone, inside that the learning zone, and inside that the comfort zone. Now, the comfort zone is, and these aren't my words, these were taken from the where I got this image, lifeless. I'm not quite sure if lifeless is totally accurate. Lifeless, but secure, yes. Comfort zone stuff is very secure. Unchallenged, absolutely. We don't really have to challenge ourselves. We're doing everything by default. It can be boring, so you can get bored in that comfort zone. It's very stable, it's very safe, and it's very easy as well. At the other extreme, let's go into the red panic zone. That's a time where you're overwhelmed with too much stuff. You're being pushed beyond your limits to the point where you don't know what the hell you're doing. And that's a zone where it's filled with fear. It's very tense. It can be absolutely exhausting, and it's certainly very stressful as well. With new team members coming on board, and indeed, if you've got a constant and never-ending improvement culture as part of your team ethic, then you also want all your team members to be feeling in the learning zone all the time. The learning zone is a beautiful space. That's the space that we just get better and better in. Learning zone is where we're being pushed, but not too hard. So we feel excited, exhilarated, challenged, willing to risk, and we have got expectations of getting better and better all the time. And so we want to make sure that your new employee comes in, they're never going to feel comfort zone, but we don't want them to go to panic zone. So we want to encourage them to be inside learning zone, and then moving forward, we want the whole team to be inside learning zone, as I say, because it's when we are constantly getting better that we are constantly improving the service that we're providing to our patients, constantly improving the way we behave with one another, and constantly improve the impact that the business is having on all of its stakeholders. This is another element of making sure that you understand the principles around what's going on for your new team member, and to encourage you not to overwhelm them with too much stuff. It is sometimes easy to think we just need that position filled and train them up as quickly as possible because we don't have time to train anybody really. And so you dump everything on them and go, come on, get up to speed. So the hierarchy of competence, and a wonderful way of looking at this, is remembering back to when you were first driving a car. And we're going to go through these one quadrant at a time. First of all, we are in unconscious incompetence before we even start to learn to drive a car. So we are unaware of the skill or our lack of proficiency at that skill. So when you were 5 years old and you saw your parents driving a car and thinking, one day I'll drive a car, you were in unconscious incompetence. You had no idea that you were no good at this skill. That's a lovely ignorant space to be in. This is totally comfortable. Then when we were 17 and we got behind the wheel for the first time and we tried the brake, whoop, and we tried the accelerator, we tried the steering, we moved into conscious incompetence. That is where we are very aware of the proficiency required in that skill, but we don't have it. So now you know, gosh, I'm no longer ignorant. I know that this is a skill I need to master, and I know that I'm no good at it just yet. So conscious incompetence is when we're very aware of where our incompetency lies. This is an uncomfortable space for most people, and why many people opt for comfort zone stuff only, because they are uncomfortable being aware that they are incompetent at anything. However, the wonderful thing at conscious incompetence is that it's very, very temporary. If you put in the research, the practice, the work to get better at a particular skill, this can be a very short-lived feeling, and you quickly move into something that's a whole lot more comfortable, and you've got that sense of achievement at the same time. So conscious competence, this is where you are now in the car, you know how much pressure to put on the brake and how much pressure to put on the accelerator and how to steer. However, you wouldn't be able to drive from point A to point B and have someone hold a conversation with you in the car at the same time. You still need to concentrate very carefully on all of the actions to get better at that skill. So you've got conscious competence. You're competent at it. You can get to point A to point B, but you've got to think carefully about every step. Now, this is usually the conscious incompetence, and the conscious competence is the space that your new employee is when they are starting a new job with you. Everything is exhausting because they're thinking so clearly about every step they make. Am I behaving properly? Is my presentation right? Did I say the right thing? What's that patient's name again? This is a new dental software system I've got to learn. Oh my goodness, when do I take lunch? And so they're thinking very carefully about everything. So it can be a very tiring time for them in that first week. And this is why I say, take it easy on them. Don't overload them. It's too easy to overwhelm a new employee, and we don't want somebody in overwhelm. What overwhelm does, it reduces our level of self-confidence. And in order to perform well at anything, we have to feel like we're capable. We have to feel competent. We have to have the self-confidence that, sure, I may not be great at it at the moment, but I'm getting better and better all the time. I have the confidence to keep moving forward in a positive, happy way. And then the last quadrant of the hierarchy of competence is unconscious competence, where you are right now with your driving. You drive from point A to point B. You can hold a conversation, think of a to-do list in your head. Oh, it's a new building that's built up over there. Noticing all these things around you. So you're performing the skill at a point where it's all automatic. You're not thinking about every little step. And it's when we get to unconscious competence, now we're ready to learn the next thing. And so when we've developed that level of competence, that's when you layer up more and more information, more and more responsibilities on the team member, because it's at a pace that makes them feel like they're competent, achieving and progressing well. Quite often we don't provide the amount of time required for practice and repetition, where in fact practice and repetition of a new behavior, a new system, a new whatever is exactly what it takes to learn it. So repetition is a crucial part of learning. In memory, the more times patterns of thought are repeated, the more likely you will be able to recall information. So don't ever teach somebody something once and expect them to remember it forever. That's unfair. Recognize that in order for them to have that and become very competent at that new skill, they need the time and the opportunity to practice and repeat, practice and repeat. Here's a lovely quote by Paulo Coelho. Routine has nothing to do with repetition. To become really good at anything, you have to practice and repeat, until the technique becomes intuitive. And Aristotle, it is frequent repetition that produces a natural tendency, and you want a team of team members whose natural tendency is that high-level customer service, saying those great things to the patients all the time, behaving in a beautiful, dynamic way with one another, and helping run the operations of the day with a lovely natural tendency of doing it well. Allow them the chance to practice and repeat, practice and repeat. And also, we all need encouragement. If we just get told the things that we are doing wrong or that needs to be improved, we think that's all you know about us. So make sure you are rewarding the behavior you want repeated. I love the way you answer the phone. That's fantastic. That's exactly what we want to see. Then they think, great, I'll keep doing that, rather than questioning, I hope it's okay. But still identifying areas that require improvement. A nice way of doing it is the PIP technique, or it could also be called the sandwich technique. So describe the positive. So the first P is a positive. You've mastered these skills so far. And then suggest the improvement. And the delivery is often the point of improvement is simply your opinion. Always be aware of that as well. So if it is, talk to them about, you know, I wonder if it would be better doing it this way, rather than saying our practice does it the other way. So there are some things such as infection control where it's got to be done that way. The way that it's written down there, that's exactly the way we're supposed to do it. Other things though could be just a matter of opinion. They might answer the phone slightly differently. Is it wrong? Quite possibly not. So you, in those sort of situations, don't say you're wrong doing it that way, because they're just using their own intuition and their own skills that they've learned to date to answer the phone in that particular way. What you can say instead is, I wonder how it would sound if you answered the phone this way instead. And then, so that's the I for the PIP process. And the second P is reinforce the positive. You have been learning quickly, and we are so delighted to have you as a member of our team. So that is delivering to them a point for improvement, but also the number of points of improvement should be half as many of the points for praise. Let them know all the wonderful things they're doing well. People will gravitate towards praise and try to avoid negative feedback. For a start, we want to have an environment where it's okay to deliver and receive negative feedback. They're just points for improvement. We're all helping each other get better and better all the time. But overload them with all the wonderful stuff they're already doing. Reinforce with them, yes, keep doing that and that and that. Maybe improve on that, but keep doing that and that and that. And they will naturally start to repeat the stuff that you're telling them that they're really good at. And that's what you want. You want people to be able to have their self-confidence boosted, their enthusiasm boosted by your cheerleading them on. So I hope that has been a helpful episode of A Lunch and Learn for you. Onboarding a new employee is a tremendous opportunity to set everybody off on the right foot and really have both sides deliver tremendous performances, for performance that then get ingrained, and that's how everyone's working together long term. It's a lovely thing to have a new team member on board, and you want to be able to get that great person so you can tap into their positivity, their happiness, their fresh ideas and their experience, and they in turn can learn from you guys as well. And together, everyone's moving forward with this great harmonious team culture, this dynamic team culture where everyone's improving and the huge beneficiaries are your patients. How wonderful is that? Well, I look forward to seeing you at next week's Lunch and Learn, and good luck if you are in the process of currently hiring and onboarding a new team member. If you have any questions or you'd like to discuss anything with me, I'm here anytime. I'll see you next week. Thanks. Bye.